I'd like now to welcome Tomas Rivera and Sonia Maria Martinez from the Chainbreaker Collective. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having us.
Now, you are drafting a residents' bill of rights, which will actually be introduced at tonight's city council meeting. What are some of the problems going on in Santa Fe with respect to housing that you are responding to with this bill of rights?
So tonight at 6:30, we are having a rally to celebrate what is the culmination of a year-long campaign. And so Chainbreaker is a membership-based economic and environmental justice organization. We do community organizing. We have about 400 members. And traditionally, we've been working on transportation issues, transit justice. And many of our members were saying that the reason we needed expansive transit systems and more of it is because people can't afford to live centrally in Santa Fe. So we wanted to move into housing, and this is our first sort of coming out of doing that. So what the Residents' Bill of Rights is we've been talking to people throughout the last year, talking to folks directly affected by this housing crisis to find out what are the major problems and to identify what potential solutions there are to Santa Fe's housing crisis. So.
And what is the nature of the crisis? What are those problems that people are telling you?
A lot of it, what's been interesting in the year that we've brought this together and talked to people in our local community is they've told us a lot of it is about affordability and how much housing is, the cost, as compared to what your wages are. And if you do the simple math, you cannot put food on the table, take care of medical bills, take care of small everyday items, and pay your rent when something like, for example, low-income housing, some people have this idea that it's inexpensive. Whereas, a matter of fact, some people are paying $1,000 a month to live in low-income housing.
Is that right?
It was outrageous
when I
found
that out.
That's
on the high end, though. It has to be.
Well, I mean, how is that justified is the question. Yeah. So I think people should ask that question.
Right. And I think that we're hearing a lot of issues like the affordability issue. Also, people are facing discrimination issues. We're seeing city resources being allocated in ways that sort of benefit some communities at the expense of others.
What do you mean?
So, for instance, a lot of folks who can't, who have been pushed out of centralized parts of town, a lot of folks are moving toward the Airport Road corridor. And this area has it's the fastest growing, most densely populated area in the city, but it's lacking very basic infrastructure like parks, healthy food options, job opportunities. And 40% of all the youth in Santa Fe live in the neighborhood. And even still, we don't see those kind of resources being put into that area at the rate to match the need out there. So I think that leads to a lot of issues like the growing health issues that people are facing. We're hearing stories of people grocery shopping in gas stations, and that's certainly not helpful.
And if there were transportation, they could make it to the Albertsons, which really isn't very far away.
Right. Groceries.
And the Sprouts.
Right. Some of those are still several miles away. I mean, it's certainly not walkable. Exactly. We need more bus service out there as well. And that's really what our segue into this was, is the transit system I think that they're doing a good job with what they have, but it's underfunded. And so therefore people aren't able to rely on it in the way that they need to.
What kinds of discrimination in housing are you seeing or are you getting reports of?
On many occasions, like, for example, we did canvassing throughout the neighborhoods here in Santa Fe near the Hopewell Man area and the Airport Road corridor. And many a times discrimination were things like maybe their children were too loud. So there was some underhanded reason why they got evicted. Or, you know, if a person had something on their record or if they looked a certain way, they weren't allowed to rent at certain apartment complexes. There were things in regards to race, even single mothers having a difficult time because they were being discriminated because they had maybe two or three children. There were quite a few things that have gone on in terms of the conversations I've had with people. And it's very upsetting because when someone's trying to, you know, do the right thing, pay their bills, and every time they turn around, they keep getting pushed down. And it's very stressful and very very difficult for these individuals to try to make it when the odds are against them quite frequently.
Right. And then one of the things that we're seeing is, for instance, why we created this Bill of Rights and why this resolution is so important to get introduced tonight is there are already some laws that protect against some of these things. Like Sonia Maria was saying, we have members tell us that they've been not rented to because they don't have a social security number, or because there's language issues or family status. Those are things that are protected by law already right now, but they're not being enforced. And there are others that we think that where the law needs to expand, like the previous felony convictions issues. People are getting background checks and credit history checks just to rent an apartment. And, you know, we think that that's a way that sort of discriminates against low-income people as well. And so those are the kind of issues that the Residents' Bill of Rights is looking at ways to address.
So let's talk about this Residents' Bill of Rights. Affordability is sort of front and center. How do you deal with affordable housing? I mean, I remember when I moved here, it was really easy to rent an inexpensive place, and I lived in a wonderfully inexpensive two-bedroom apartment for 8 years and was very happy, and they never really raised the rent very much. And then after that, I mean, it suddenly went crazy, and mm-hmm. It was very hard to find a place and so on. Everybody is dealing with this. It's a market economy. What are the solutions?
Yeah, so what the Residents' Bill of Rights does is it creates a framework for politicians and policymakers to really basically says this is our values and this is how we want housing to be legislated and to exist here in Santa Fe. So there are lots of solutions. We don't think that there's going to be a slam dunk. We definitely don't think that this resolution right now is going to solve the affordability crisis in and of itself. What it does is just creates sort of that guiding light for how to do that. But there are examples all around the country, you know, about ways to deal with that. Everything from rent-protected homes, you know, you see in a lot of sort of like places like New York and San Francisco, to things like new measures of affordability, which is something that I think is important for us. Like Sonia Maria is saying, affordability right now is based on, you know, sort of what the overall median income is. Well, we have a lot of wealth in this town and we have a lot of poverty. So that doesn't actually represent what is affordable to low-income people. So we can create new ways of measuring what affordability is based on neighborhood median income, for instance.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point because median is just like a big, huge catch-all, and you want to do something that's a lot kind of finer-grained.
Right. If I make $10 an hour and you make $100,000 an hour, then the median is not going to be affordable
Correct.
To me. You know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And that's what I think was very important about what Tomas said. We have to recognize those numbers and how skewed they are and recognize, you know, how do we come to a fair place? And I think the five pillars that are mentioned in the Residents' Bill of Rights touches on that, and it touches on affordability, and it furthers the need for quality, sustainability, accessibility, stability, as well as permanence and protections from displacement and community control. So I think they all are hand in hand ultimately, and we have to recognize all these and how they work together so that we do have communities that have affordable housing and we can nurture our communities and create healthier communities.
Right, and the idea is too not just to create affordable housing sort of off in the distance in the periphery in the way that it's happening right now. It's we want centralized affordable housing. We really want thriving communities in Santa Fe. And so I think that the different pillars that Sonia Maria was talking about that community members have identified throughout this whole process, affordability is of course one, but it has to go hand in hand with some of these other issues, like protection from displacement. You know, a lot of people who are being pushed out of neighborhoods in which some have lived for multiple generations. It's really a tragedy on lots of levels.
We have talked on this program many times to Susan Turetsky, who's the director of the Landlord-Tenant Hotline, and there's already state law or state code that addresses, and it's pretty good state code in a lot of ways, that addresses problems that both tenants and landlords have. You mentioned before problems with enforcement. What kind of enforcement is there now? What kind of enforcement would you like to see?
So it's good that you mentioned the Landlord-Tenant Hotline. So we think that the Residents' Bill of Rights will hopefully create a lot of low-hanging fruit that can be solved right away, in addition to some of the larger policies that we were talking about earlier. I think that the Landlord-Tenant Hotline used to be free and then lost its funding, and so now people get charged when they call in. So people, that's a deterrent for a lot of people who can't afford it. So they wind up doing things like not knowing what their rights are. So let's just say they're getting evicted for some reason that is unjust. And they feel like they have no place to call, they have no place to go. So they don't know what rights they have to be enforced in the first place. We see code enforcement issues, again, like some of the discrimination issues that we're talking about. They're lawsuit worthy. It's just that people don't have the real resources behind that. So we're hoping that the city will look at things like that in passing. We hope to pass this resolution and say, yes, well, maybe let's put more funding for Know Your Rights stuff. Let's maybe even have a city attorney that deals with just housing for low-income people and to start doing that kind of enforcement.
And as Tomas stated, just to elaborate on that point, a lot of people feel intimidated when they're in situations where they can be evicted, and sometimes not having that extra money to go to the hotline is even more intimidating because they don't have the resources, the monies to fight for their rights. So we want the opportunity so that they're educated thoroughly about what their rights are.
Right.
Everyone is.
Now, as many of us have seen through experience on both sides of the landlord-tenant thing, there are great landlords, there are great tenants, there are horrible landlords and horrible tenants. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there has to be a way in this, and I wonder what your thoughts on this, of protecting landlords from really bad tenants. I mean, that's part of the thing, too. I mean, there's unjust evictions, but there's also just evictions.
Sure.
People who don't pay their rent, people who destroy property, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that there's a lot of protections for landlords that exist right now. And if you sort of look at the power dynamics, we have one of our members who does translation in the courts. And he said that every single eviction case that has come before him, every single one has been found in favor of the landlord, every single one, regardless of merit. And so to me, that says that there's a bias in favor of the landlord. We also know that a landlord has sort of an inherent power dynamic over the tenant, right? So I think that a lot of those are already out there. A lot of protections for landlords are out there. A lot of landlords tend to know what their rights are. They tend to have access to resources. And again, they're able to make an eviction. They're able to raise rents on somebody. They're able to sort of do a lot of that stuff. But we're seeing that renters, and particularly in Santa Fe, feel a lot more vulnerable and just don't have the same voice. There's not a renters association out there that's sort of advocating on their behalfs. And that's what really we're trying to do with this campaign, is to try to create a group of folks that are educated about what their rights are and who are able to really have a real voice in this whole process as well.
And as Tomas said, I think that power dynamic is significant. When you have the power to put somebody out on the streets and make them homeless, that's a significant power advantage. So I think that maybe on occasion some of the landlords do deal with these stories, these horror stories, but on more occasions it's the tenant that's dealing with the possibility of homeless, and there's many factors involved.
And we hear a lot of stories where the landlord is sort of in the situations that you're talking about, tends to be sort of the person that's renting out their house and not somebody who's bought out a whole block and decided they want to rent it out, or owns an apartment complex from out of state and stuff like that. I mean, our focus is really on sort of the big picture.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about as I was reading this, because, I mean, the person who has, a guest house that they're renting out or an apartment in their house that they're renting out, a lot of those people are really trying to survive.
Sure.
Whereas when we're talking about new developments, large developments, apartment complexes, that's a different story, and the economics of those and the, as you say, the power dynamics of those are something that I think most of us don't fully understand.
Right.
Correct.
Right, and it's that I think that it's a lot of what our members and the folks who have created this Bill of Rights feel and live every day. That sense of being told, to sign a lease that you don't understand because it's not in a language that you can read, not knowing what's in that lease and then being told something is and then being evicted upon it. To us, that's not right. And those are stories that we hear over and over and over again.
Now, you have in the Bill of Rights that the leases should be written in the language of the renter.
Mm-hmm.
I assume you're talking about English and Spanish, not Mongolian or Swahili.
Well, I think that the most common languages in Santa Fe are English and Spanish, so that's what we see the most of. But, you know, I think that if somebody, you know, speaks Swahili, that they should have access to that as well. So you see, for instance, you see some of those in larger cities like New York and Chicago, where there are much more diverse languages being spoken. But regardless, people should have a right to know what they're signing.
We're talking to Tomas Rivera and Sonia Maria Martinez of the Chainbreaker Collective. Now, one of the pillars of the Residents' Bill of Rights is community control. What, in your view, would a democratic community housing market look like?
Yeah, so that is also a big question, and again, why we think that the Bill of Rights is just a step in to answering some of those questions. In some ways, there is already some models for what community control looks like. Ideally, we think that that means things like housing trusts and land trusts, where people can literally control and have the final say over their homes because they own them. And even if that's a collective process and not just an individual process. And there are good models of that kind of trusts that happen around the country. Also, we would like to see special protections for communities that are the most vulnerable to displacement or who are most vulnerable to discrimination and those kind of issues. There are good models around the country and even here in Santa Fe of things like overlay districts.
What's an overlay district?
So, for instance, there are special protections for historical districts, right? So, like the downtown area, you couldn't build a 16 high rise and then paint it neon green, for instance, right? There are special laws that protect specific areas. We would like to see areas that are communities of color and low-income communities have special protections and, you know, have their own boards that are able to decide, we need these resources, here's how they should be allocated, here are the special needs of our community, because there are folks that have been traditionally marginalized, and so we want to kind of balance that out a little bit.
I mean, the historical process of marginalization is pretty recent. I mean, this was a Spanish-speaking town until, what, a generation or two ago? And so, you know, people who were the center of the town, who were the town itself, now suddenly marginalized. It's, among other things, a kind of, like, city-wide cultural loss and really, for some, you know, traumatic experience.
It is definitely a traumatic experience and a cultural loss. I think it's actually not as recent as it feels. If you look at the history of like the Canyon Road downtown area, that process of displacement has been happening, you know, since post-World War II in lots of ways. There's been different waves of that.
That seems recent to me.
Yeah, well, it's recent in the grand scheme of things because we're such an old city for sure. But you know, this is not just unique to Santa Fe either. This is happening all over the country. And I think that the sort of downturn in the market has created this bubble, which cities all around the country are starting to have to re-deal with this sort of densification push. I mean, we're working in coalitions with folks in San Francisco and Oakland and, you know, Detroit, who is dealing with some really intense housing stuff, and Miami, just all around the country, the same dynamics are happening over and over and over again. And so we want this Residents' Bill of Rights resolution to sort of be a stepping stone, not just for Santa Fe, but for the whole country. And I think that Santa Fe, in lots of ways, often does lead the country in progressive policies. And I think that we have the opportunity to do that again now.
So we're talking to Tomas Rivera and Sonia Maria Martinez from the Chainbreaker Collective. And so tonight at the City Council, there will be a resolution introduced, this Residents' Bill of Rights, and tell us about what your hopes are for this process. A resolution is a kind of a non-binding set of ideas, essentially, or maybe hopes for future ordinances. It doesn't have the power of law, but it definitely has the power of starting and maintaining a conversation.
Right, sure, yeah. So the resolution that's going to be introduced tonight by Councillor Maestas, and again, it's the culmination of a year-long campaign. It won't have the force of law behind it, but what we want it to be is sort of a set of values that the city uses to create those laws that do have some teeth behind them in the future. So this is really just the first step in that process. It's been about a year coming, and we know that it's going to be at least that down the road. All of the issues that we're talking about here are so huge that it's going to take a lifetime for us to solve them. this Bill of Rights will just create that framework to really guide policymakers currently and in the future about, you know, what are the values that we want to see in Santa Fe? What kind of city do we really want to build? We want to keep Santa Fe livable for people in Santa Fe, and here's how we can do it.
It's so funny. Every place I've ever lived, of course, I haven't lived that many places, but that was kind of like crummy, and then the artists move into the crummiest neighborhoods, and then they stay for a while and make it fabulous, and then the yuppies move in and the artists can't afford to live there, and it's just the same everywhere. I mean, it's like a pattern, and somehow interrupting that pattern is tricky business, and that's what you're trying to do.
That's exactly right. And I think, you know, we talked about before about the trauma that people experience with that, and the and how it affects, you know, it's a cultural loss that, and it really is something that people feel very deeply. And I think that in Santa Fe in particular, I can speak to myself, the house that I live in right now, right in the Hopewell Man neighborhood, it's been in my family for four generations. My dad grew up in the house. My grandfather built the house. It's not just a home. It's certainly not an investment property for us. It's something that is very personal. And I think that the inability to hold on to that is really a loss. It's a personal loss that is felt very deeply. And I think that, so when we talk about housing as being a right, that's what we're speaking to as well.
I was actually surprised that there wasn't a cap on taxes for people in exactly that situation, because people tend to be pushed out when taxes rise precipitously.
Yeah. There's. I think that dynamic that you were talking about, sort of that gentrification wave, it is typical, and it's hard to solve that problem, particularly, you know, in a for-profit housing system. How do we figure out how to do that? And how do we do it in a way where, you know, we don't penalize people for having a home that has been there in their family for a long time like that? And I think that, again, this Bill of Rights will kind of provide that framework for how to make those decisions. And some, you know, the city council has power over some things and not over everything. So some things have to be done on the state level. Some of them, really everything has to be done on the federal level. Santa Fe is just stepping up and once again picking up the slack.
But and again, as Tomas stated, I think ultimately it's the people that we've spoke to door to door, families, single mothers, grandmas who help financially support their daughters and their grandchildren. It's all these people very struggling many times, but very dedicated to their families. And we want to see communities that respect that, and that we're behind those communities, and we look at how affordability can become truth. So I think this is a great foundation, and these people want the information and they want the knowledge so that they don't feel intimidated in situations where they might be forced out, gentrification becomes an issue. So I think all of this is going to be an amazing opportunity for more people to get involved, and we let people know that they have every opportunity to get involved with Chain Breakers. They can contact us, they can visit our website, and we have an amazing group of people, our members, who are supporting this, and they believe in it, and they want it. They want the knowledge out there so that people have that information.
That's right.
Chainbreaker Collective can be found on the web at chainbreaker.org. And is there a phone number that people can call?
Sure. You can call our office at 505-989-3858.
3858. Well, I want to thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe, Tomas Rivera and Sonia Maria Martinez. And we will see you at tonight's City Council meeting. If people show up, will they have an opportunity to talk or?
Yeah, there'll be a brief public comments from the floor moment. We also have a rally at 6:30 between right before the evening session. So come and you'll hear people give their speeches, people who have been involved in this campaign. And really what we're saying is that we love Santa Fe and we want to be able to stay living here.
I want to thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.